League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buehr.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back from the bye week, where the Gophers went 1-0 in their bye week. As far as I know, nobody got injured during those bye week practices. We got a few things to discuss as the Gophers come out of their bye. They have a now ranked opponent on the road this weekend with the Illinois Fighting Illini, winning in a barn burner 9-6 in Champaign. We'll have a lot to discuss there coming up on the preview podcast going live on Thursday morning. But joining us for this bi-week edition is Dinkytown Athlete's Own, my second cousin, the great Derek Burns. Derek, how was your bi-week? How did you get to spend it?
Oh, it was good. I got to watch a lot of college football like I normally do. That's my passion. Didn't get to see the Gophers, of course, but took a close look at a couple Big Ten games, which I'm excited to talk about with you guys.
All right. So, Ryan, let's just do kind of an overview of a bye week and what that looks like for the Gophers quickly. And then we can talk maybe some injuries and what we might expect. I know this will evolve over the week and we will get zero information from which we can prognosticate. But, very obvious things. The bye weeks are usually good. It's time for guys to get right. It's time to get some work in as well. So maybe let's start with the injuries and then, you know, what else goes on during the week, because I know it's a busy time for you, our bye week. So in terms of injuries, we're all acutely aware of the fact that Chris Ottman-Bell will not be back. So he is not going to be there. But the one we're monitoring probably very closely is Mo Ibrahim, and the fact that he didn't go against Purdue, which was a little bit of a surprise to many. But, you know, it sounded like from PJ that he did practice that week before the Purdue game. You got to think he got some work in this week. But yeah, I'm curious to get your perspective on, you know, what you've learned, if anything, but also, you know, what does a week look like for the Gophers in a bye?
So the first thing I'll say is we need to change our best on this podcast, Luke, because I think we've been, I don't know if knowingly or not, we got to get Mo's last name right. And there's literally an announcement.
Ibrahim, I'm sorry. Ibrahim.
I believe it's Ibrahim, isn't it?
Ibrahim? I don't know. I'm so, Derek, I'm so bad at names.
Ibrahim. No,
it's Ibrahim, yeah. So here's the story with Mo is, from what I've heard, and again, we're not going to get anything from PJ during the week, but sounds like they tried to rest Mo's ankle as best they possibly could during the bye. And the good news I can share here on Sunday night is I know that Mo at least practiced some on Sunday night off that ankle. So I can't imagine a world where Mo doesn't play in this game, considering it may be the most important game in the Big Ten West for Minnesota going forward, which, boy, oh boy, did I not think I was going to be saying that before the season. But I also think that he knows this is just one that he's had time to rest it. Even if he's not at 100% going forward, it's his last season of college football. Another interesting injury nugget I would say too is everybody's favorite running back that they got to see in the spring game, true freshman Zach Evans, aka during every Gopher football game, I get asked, why isn't Zach Evans playing? And then I reply, Zach Evans hasn't dressed in a single game because of an injury. Well, there's an update there. Zach Evans was in full pads during the bye week. And then here on Sunday, sources tell me that young man was also in full pads. So sounds like Zach Evans' availability may be actually changing. So we'll continue to monitor that. But in terms of what a Gopher bye week looks like, Minnesota practiced on, I believe, Wednesday, Thursday during the bye. So what happens Sunday, Monday, Tuesday? Self-scout. Every single bye week, PJ Fleck and his staff, they do some self-scout. What does the offense need to improve? What does the defense need to improve? What do they believe their strengths and weaknesses are? AKA the defensive staff game plans the offense from what they've seen. And the same thing goes for the offense against the defense, so they can figure out what they need to fix, what they need to continue to accentuate, and they move forward from there. And then Friday, all the coaches were out on the road, have all those nuggets and notes on Gopher Illustrated. Again, $1 gets you behind the paywall. And now they're back on their regular schedule. So they got a little extra time to prepare. I can't imagine Kirk Ciarrocca left his office much, especially after the offensive performance. 10 points, Justin Gard. I just want you to know that. They scored 10 points. So, again, it's tough to be, I guess, negative coming out of a bye week. But, again, the injury and updates sound promising. Again, we're saying this 6 days in advance of the Gophers' next game. But, I mean, I'm very hopeful that Mo Ibrahim is able to compete against Illinois.
All right, Derek, take me through what it was like to be a player on a bye week, especially, you know, you're a student athlete and you have this 1 week to kind of get right in between games. So what was it, what was your experience like?
Well, Ryan's correct. The two deep, generally it's a get healthy week, but you know, I will tell you that from the first game through the end of the season, you know, these guys are never fully healthy. I mean, you're banged up to some degree with, you know, joints and sprains and things like that really the whole year. So, but that being said, you know, bye week, the two deep, the coaches do their best to get all those guys healthy. And in some cases, the guys that are on the scout team and the younger guys that aren't playing in that two deep, they'll actually work them harder during the bye week. So get in, you know, a scrimmage or two. And then of course, self-scout, it's just an opportunity to go deeper for the coaches. And I know at least offensively, it's an opportunity to add layers, because when you add things, it's awful difficult during a game week where you really have 2 weeks, or excuse me, 2 days of hard practice, to add in more than just maybe a handful of wrinkles, but a bye week gives you an opportunity to add a layer. So they may, you know, have the opportunity to add a whole new formation. They may be able to work different personnel, people at different positions. So again, it's, you have a little bit more time to get a little bit more nuanced and develop some things, which is important because obviously the teams that they're facing going forward have diagnosed the film they've seen. So now you can put some things in that haven't been on film, at least offensively, and, you know, work that in to these games coming up.
All right. So let's do our own little quick self scouts of the offense and the defense. Where would you guys like to see improvements, et cetera? So Ryan, maybe start with you. I think the obvious one can be offense in terms of looking there and where to improve, but you know, where would you like to see improvement from the offense?
I just think consistency amongst the skill position players. Something pretty easy to kind of diagnose, especially after the inconsistencies we saw against Purdue. But it's frustrating because we spent so much time last season, or me even listening to PJ Fleck every single week, just talk about the inconsistencies amongst his wide receivers and his skill position players and how frustrating that was. Well, we've seen here in 2022, first two games without Chris Ottman-Bell, the skill position players, I don't think could have played any better against Michigan State. And then I don't think they could have played any worse against Purdue. And so that's where I just want to see consistency from guys like Trey Potts, Bryce Williams. And I mean, there may not be another player that needs to really step up here than Dalen Wright. We continue to talk about, and we have for so long on this podcast, about, you look at him in that wide receiver room and how physically gifted he is. He needs to play to his size. I'm tired of seeing the 6'3", 200-pound Dalen Wright play like he's the size of Clay Geary. Peace and love to Clay Geary's parents if they're listening, but he is a big-bodied receiver, and he needs to just play better, and Minnesota needs him to play better. So offensively, Luke, for me, my self-scout, I need to see more consistency among guys not named Daniel Jackson, Mo Ibrahim, and Brevin Spanford.
All right, Derek, what about you? If you were giving a self-scout assessment, what would you be telling? What would you be telling the offensive staff in a meeting?
Well, I think that. Well, I will say this. I don't think the offensive coaches would agree with me because coaches tend to focus on fundamentals, consistency, as Ryan mentioned. My perspective with this Gophers team is I really believe that if you're going to play at a Big Ten championship level, you need 2 to 3 players on either side of the ball making plays that are way above and beyond just good or above average or solid or consistent, you know, whatever term you want to use. So with Chris Ottman-Bell being out, and then of course Mo Ibrahim in the last game being out, I thought that that's really what was lacking. When the Gophers weren't able to develop consistency, they couldn't bail themselves out with big plays. So if I'm the offensive coaching staff, I'm trying to put together game plans to get your best playmakers on offense chunk plays, whether that's now with Chris Ottman-Bell being out. Obviously, Mo Ibrahim is going to get, if he's healthy, is going to just organically create plays for you every game that he's healthy. But beyond that, are you going to put things together for Brevin Spanford? Is it going to be Daniel Jackson, who we saw, you know, have flashes? Or as Ryan mentioned, someone like Dalen Wright. You know, Dalen athletically is incredibly gifted. How can they put him in a position to be making big plays when they need it? So if they're not able to just run the ball for 6-7 yards every single time, which they're not going to be able to do against some of these defenses they're going to face throughout the rest of the year, how can you find a way to get chunk plays on offense?
All right, so let's talk a little bit then about the defense and what kind of self-scout we might be willing to give them. I do want to put the disclaimer in, you know, Purdue ended up running the ball somewhat effectively and then, you know, again, went back to being unable to run the ball this week against Maryland. Now I know there was a real long breaking run that added to those statistics. But yeah, Ryan, what would you tell this Gopher defense?
If I'm going to critique them, I would say run defense, but I want to see more consistent pressure. I know that Jod Joyner has flashed. I know that Thomas Rush continues to lead the team in pressures, but I want to see these pressures turned into sacks. And I think for Joe Rossi off the bye, I think he's going to put a lot more pressure on his secondary because of how they've handled it so far through 5 games. And I think you're going to see him get more aggressive with sending 5 or 6 if they're not able to generate pressure with 4. But I want to see more from guys like Trill Carter on the interior there. Can we see more flashes from Gage Keys, Darnell Jeffries? But I want to see more, more pressure around the face of the quarterbacks because, again, even from watching some of that Purdue-Maryland game, I know that Aiden O'Connell has a couple of throws a game that are just egregious and they become interceptions. We saw that against Purdue, against Minnesota. But he can also make some throws, boy, where it's like there ain't another quarterback on the rest of the schedule for Minnesota or even this upcoming weekend that can make those throws. And if you can put a collegiate quarterback off their spot, more times than not, good things are going to happen. Derek, what would you choose defensively?
Well, I think I would go with your first instinct, which was don't hesitate to be more aggressive with the secondary. It's something that I think they're easing into. I don't have any criticism with the speed at which they're easing into that, but we're just seeing when the training wheels are taken off of this secondary and they're not just asked to play coverage and play conservative and they can actually start to jump routes, I think the secondary can be really special. So with that being said, you know, if they're not able to get pressure with 4, I do think that they should look to bring more 5 and 6 man pressures. And if the quarterback doesn't check down, if he chooses to throw the ball downfield, I think that's an opportunity for turnovers if they're being allowed to be aggressive enough and jump routes. Now, I say that fully understanding that the risk there is you jump a route at the wrong time, you don't make the play, it's a touchdown. So that's not something that this staff and philosophy of this team has been. But again, I think you have the talent and the experience in the secondary to be more aggressive and get yourself some turnovers. Again, especially if you're in a tight game, maybe the offense isn't as consistent or isn't moving the ball the way you want to and you need a spark, I think they can lean on that for the defense.
All right, anything else you guys want to touch on kind of looking interior to the Gophers before we move on?
I think it's going to be critical that the linebackers also continue to play, I think, as well as we've seen. We saw on that long run against Purdue, the linebackers got out of their fit, missed some tackles. You saw on that opening drive, linebackers missing their tackles. And that's where now they get to go against the king of yards after contact, where Chase Brown leads, I think, all of college football with almost 900 rushing yards, and he leads all of the country in yards after contact. So Minnesota has got to be able to wrap up, and that means guys like Mariano, Cody Lindenberg, Braylon Oliver. You can throw probably Flip Dix into that as well. But if you just want to look micro view with this game coming up this weekend, the linebackers are going to need to continue to play well, and they cannot miss tackles.
And I would just say to that point, you know, I know this isn't the Illinois preview podcast, but there have been times when the Gopher defense has not gotten the play in quick enough, and they can't get guys lined up, and they've taken timeouts when they've needed to. But let me tell you, this Illinois offense is going to give you a myriad of looks for personnel and formations. So they're going to have to be incredibly mentally sharp on the defensive side of the ball to get guys lined up with the right call in the right position on each and every play. So that's going to be something to look forward to.
Ryan, the Burns Insurance Agency has been a longtime sponsor of Gopher Gridiron Radio, and we know that Bill Burns and the team there are able to save people money. And if they want to save money, how do they get a hold of Burns Insurance?
Well, they can go to insurancebyburns.com, but I will answer the same question I get from folks every time they ask me about him. He's a gigantic Gopher fan. He is an independent insurance agent, which he can source over 20 different insurance companies to make sure you're getting the best coverage at the best price. He is licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, Florida, and Utah. So if you don't live in the great state of Minnesota and you live in one of those other states, if you think you're paying too much for your home, your auto, your commercial business, whatever it may be, shoot him an email at bill@insurancebyburns.com or just head on over to their website at insurancebyburns.com.
All right, as we do every week, we are going to take a look around the Big Ten and break down the games from this week. So just to start, there's a Friday night game. That was Nebraska visiting Rutgers in Piscataway. Nebraska ends up taking that game 14-13. It was a tough watch, boys. I did watch the majority of this specific game. I thought Kerr's early was really good, and then, boy, they really struggled as the game evolved, not being able to score any points in the second half, and Nebraska gets two touchdowns in that second half to seal this game. But I walked away not impressed really with either team, and subsequently Rutgers actually fired their offensive coordinator today. So Derek, what did you see out of this game in specific?
Well, I mean, the lack of adjustments is what jumped out to me. You know, Rutgers, for, you know, they're trying to build talent there. Generally, they've been pretty fundamentally sound and well coached. And in this game, I think they jumped out. I think it was 13-0. Okay. So they jumped out 13-0, and of course Nebraska made adjustments, which is what you do. But then Rutgers just didn't counter with anything, which was just kind of mind boggling. So yeah, I wasn't overly impressed with the game overall. But credit to Nebraska, they made adjustments in the second half, and Rutgers just didn't match them. And Nebraska did enough to come out with a win on the road.
To Derek's point, Luke, I don't know if you guys have seen this. Rutgers has since fired their offensive coordinator following this game.
Yeah.
So I can understand maybe that Mr. Shiano wasn't exactly thrilled with Sean Gleason, the offensive coordinator there. And so there's been a change.
I saw someone texted me too that Sean Gleason was like for assistance, like in the upper one, or he was above $1 million a year. So like, whoo.
Boy, I wonder what that buyout was. The only other thing I'd really mention here is, no, I don't think Nebraska is a legitimate Big Ten West contender. I know they're at 2-1 in the conference. And for those of you, so after that final interception, I had a couple of people tag me in tweets about Nebraska's secondary, my favorite position group in college football, just going ham on celebrating in the end zone, just having the time of their lives, not their. So this concludes, I believe, the easy part of Nebraska's schedule, because their next six games: Purdue, Illinois, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa. So I understand that they got maybe a little bit of mojo, but I'm going to tell you, I think it comes to an end this weekend when they play Jeff Brohm's team.
All right, let's transition, talk about Ohio State and Michigan State. Probably no surprise, Ohio State rolled 49-20 in this game. C.J. Stroud on the game, 21 of 26, 361 yards, six touchdowns, one interception. I guess there is a blemish there on the stat sheet. But holy cats, guys. I think it's safe to say we all agree that Ohio State's probably the best team in the country. We maybe have a little bit Big Ten bias, but again, just another game that Michigan State struggled massively against the pass. But no question that Ohio State is the cream of the crop when it comes to the Big Ten, Derek.
Yeah, I think what's amazing to me about Ohio State is when you game plan schematically for them to play their offense, the number one thing you want to try and take away is chunk passing plays, is long pass, and nobody can do it. Now, I know that Michigan State, that's really where they've struggled big time, is in their back four. But it, again, as a defensive coaching staff, you know that these teams go in and say, look, if Ohio State's, let's make them run the ball, let's make them beat us, you know, 6-7 yards at a time, let's keep everything in front of us. And people just, they have so much talent at the wide receiver position, which they really have for the last number of years, that you just can't do it. I mean, there are times where you play your safeties deep enough and they catch underneath the safety, but they're such good athletes that they just catch and run, you know, and they can break one tackle. It's a long touchdown. And that's, you know, that was the story of this game. I actually thought early in the year, before Ohio State really got rolling, I think they were chasing those big passing plays too much. You know, teams were trying to take that away, and they really should have just said, okay, fine, we'll rush for 300 yards and you know, throw for 200. But they were, I think, trying to chase those big passing plays. But here we go, you know, after the first couple weeks, they're back to just gashing teams with long touchdown passes.
In a Big Ten road game, they put up over 600 yards of total offense. And oh, by the way, they did it without their best receiver in Jaxon Smith-Njigba and without their leading rusher from last week, who scored 5 rushing touchdowns, in Mayan Williams. And they still put up 49 points, and they still put up 600 yards on the road. Look, I get that Michigan State isn't the team that they were last year, but we're now halfway through the season, and the fact that Ohio State isn't ranked number one in the country right now is absolutely ludicrous. And you can't tell me it's because Georgia has an SEC logo and Ohio State is in the Big Ten. It's just, they are an absolute buzzsaw team. And the other thing I would note is the change of defensive coordinator. I understand that Michigan ends up putting up 20 points on the day with a late touchdown, but they just completely shut down the run for Michigan State. And that's why I think this is a legitimate national title contender in a Buckeye team, is because yes, they have CJ Stroud and all these weapons, but defensively, I think they're going to be able to hold up against whether it's Bama, Georgia, Clemson, or Michigan, whoever it ends up being.
All right, so you mentioned Michigan. Let's talk about Michigan winning 31-10 over Indiana. This game I didn't get to watch much of, but I did keep an eye on the box score and was surprised to see that it was 10-10 at half. Michigan proceeds to score 21 in the second half and ultimately winning this game 31-10. I think the story of this game has to be some sort of adjustments. I apologize, I didn't get a chance to watch this one or even the condensed version, but yeah, Derek, what are your thoughts?
Well, Indiana has heart. I did keep an eye on this game, and I've said that before in previous breakdowns, that they do have fight, they do have heart. They obviously don't have the athletes that Michigan does, but they went toe to toe in the first half. They really bowled themselves on defense. kept Michigan in check. And really, the story of the first half was Michigan just didn't have enough of the long plays. But in the second half, it just, you know, it caught up with them, and Michigan was able to execute better on offense. And Indiana just sputtered out on their offensive side of the ball. So Michigan ended up pulling away. And you do see that from time to time where there's a big underdog. They can hold their own for a quarter or two, which I think Indiana did in this case. But ultimately, you know, Michigan is just too talented and pulled away in the second half.
Well, you want to know why I was 10-10 at half is Michigan misses a field goal, and then they also go for it.
That's
on
true.
A fourth and
right.
two
yeah.
in
right.
Indiana territory, and they don't get it. And then they are just the better team with more depth. But I think what I've learned in the last 2 weeks against with Michigan is I think J.J. McCarthy has rebounded really well since that Maryland game. Now, I know the stats will look pretty good for that game, but I remember watching it live, and he couldn't throw a deep ball to save his life. And he doesn't turn the ball over in Kinnick, which, again, not a lot of quarterbacks can say that. And then he responds in this game, throws for over 300 with three touchdowns. Blake Corum continues to do big things. I will also continue to say I think Michigan is a pretty damn good football team, and I know we're going to find out a lot more about them this weekend. When they play host to Penn State, a top 10 team, when they come into town. But I think Khaki Pants has got something good going on in Ann Arbor right now.
All right, let's talk about the Purdue win on the road at Maryland, 31-29. I did get a chance to watch the majority of this game. This was interesting and quite the fourth quarter. In some ways, it's like, boy, Maryland kind of got the short end of the straw, but in the same respect, like, they also shot themselves in the foot to a certain extent as well. And if you're not familiar, I'll try and do my best to summarize this in short. Maryland goes up by is going to go up by a touchdown. They score six. Ultimately, there's what should have been called an offsides. Purdue blocks the kick. So then they're only up six. Purdue goes down and scores a touchdown. Maryland goes three and out. Then Purdue gets the ball back and then actually is going to play 4-minute offense, but ultimately is able to hit a wide dump. They get down, score. Maryland gets the ball back with something like around a minute and a half. This goes all the way down and scores again. So they're down eight. They have to get the 2-point conversion. They actually succeed, but it's called back because the guy was an eligible man downfield, rightfully so. And then on the subsequent try, wasn't able to get it, but it was close. Boy, this was a crazy game, really fun to watch. But Derek, in the end, Purdue found a way where a couple times earlier this season, they just weren't able to, but they found a way this time.
Well, one of the interesting things about this game, you know, because we've talked about how the big change this year for Purdue is how well their defense is playing. I mean, not only against Minnesota, but in several other games, they're much better than they have been previously. And I really think that the difference why this game was close and how Maryland was able to put up points is the mobility of Taulia Tagovailoa. He single-handedly, out of the pocket, saved their offense a number of times. We did talk in the pre-production, too, that Maryland schemed well for Purdue and took advantage of their aggressive front and had a good screen game to counter that. But if I were looking at the box score and hadn't seen the game, I would ask, well, how did somebody put up almost 30 against this good Purdue defense? And when we've seen this in the past, and Taulia doesn't do it consistently every single game, but if he has a game where he's really on and he can just get out of the pocket and just fling the ball around the field, which he did a number of times, I mean, he bailed their offense out and sustained drives a number of times. It's just awfully tough to scheme against that. So that was one thing that jumped out to me. And yeah, I mean, ultimately it was another one score Purdue game, which just seems to be a trend at this point. But they did do enough, you know, with the exception of the really bad missed call on the blocked extra point, Purdue did do enough to win.
Yeah. You have Purdue who can't win a close game to save their life in September, changes their best, and now has won two close games on the road. I learned just before this podcast, because I was traveling all day back from a wedding, that Purdue's not ranked. And I don't really know why not, because they've got two. I thought Maryland should have been ranked coming into last week. especially over like somebody like LSU, which was ridiculous. So you could argue they've got two fantastic, you know, recent road wins. And is Syracuse still undefeated? They are. And Penn State is a top 10 team. So their two losses are ranked opponents. They've got arguably two ranked wins. Yet here we are, and Texas is ranked.
just throwing that out.
Yeah, and their two losses, did you say, Ryan, the two teams they lost to haven't lost, right?
Penn State and Syracuse are still undefeated. So, I don't know. I know there's a lot of pretty decent teams in college football, and I know, but the way Purdue is playing right now, I mean, they're finding ways to win close games. Aiden O'Connell continues to be really good. And I think the other thing I took from this game was Jeff Brohm finally figured out a way to have somebody not named Charlie Jones catch the football. I believe if my Tartan High education math is correct, they had seven different guys with multiple catches. They had six different guys with three-plus catches. I mean, they were actually spreading the ball around. It wasn't, let's target Charlie Jones 20 times on a game. So we'll get into some more Purdue thoughts because I know a lot of you have interesting Big Ten West thoughts that we'll get into. But, I mean, this is obviously what we think is a very good win on the road for Purdue.
All right, so Wisconsin travels to Evanston and just rolls 42-7. Gets your favorite head coach his first win, Ryan.
My favorite head coach that no one is talking about on the hot seat. And just tell him about this game and then I'll.
All right. So Wisconsin rolls. Graham Mertz is 20 of 29 for 299 yards and five touchdowns. Braylon Allen, 23 carries, 135 yards. Oh, also he threw a touchdown pass. So you can see how that day was going for them. In this game, Wisconsin got off to somewhat of a sluggish start, only scoring 7 points in the first quarter, but absolutely blitzed in the second with 21, 0-for in the third, and then 14 in the final frame. Ultimately, you know, this was a game that really wasn't in doubt at half, you know, going into halftime. But Derek, Wisconsin, you know, looked good, but Northwestern is really a struggle.
Well, that's just it. I mean, if you're Wisconsin, you feel good coming out of this game. I mean, this was a quote unquote get right game for them. Things looked more crisp. They had more of a machine mentality on offense that they've seen. But you just, you know, this is a Northwestern team that I believe lost to Southern Illinois. I mean, this is this could be a historically bad Northwestern team. But schematically, it was interesting to see how would the offense change, you know, with a change at head coach. And I would say that Graham Mertz was under center a lot more. They did play with single back. They didn't, you know, I don't think he's a fullback hardly at all, but did play with two tight ends occasionally. So a few different wrinkles. Again, Graham Mertz not being in shotgun as much, a little bit more of a run first mentality. We'll see if that continues. But again, the outcome and some of the statistics and things, I don't think you can draw too much just because the, you know, Northwestern is just not playing very well.
I think that's putting it kindly. I mean, they've lost five straight, and it's just Northwestern won three games in 2019, three games in 2021, and I don't know that they win another game on their schedule. I will remind people, they just got Wisconsin at home and lost by 35 points. Now they get to travel on the road to Maryland, on the road to Kinnick Stadium. Then they take on Ohio State before they travel to Minneapolis, then go to West Lafayette before ending their season with the Fighting Ryan Walters of Illinois. So we would be looking at, in three of the last four seasons for Pat Fitzgerald, he has won a total of seven games. I'm not calling for him to be fired tomorrow, but I don't understand why every national media person is just giving Pat Fitzgerald a pass. Maybe it's because if Pat Fitzgerald can't do it, who can? I could understand that. But this is a horrible Northwestern team. Like, horrible with all capital letters. And, again, when Graham Mertz throws five touchdowns with no interceptions against you, sheesh.
is my only response, Luke.
All right. Let's talk about what was probably the game that we are all keeping an eye on closely for obvious reasons because of the implications in the Big Ten West. Iowa goes to Champaign and loses 6-9. Not a single touchdown. It was 6-6 at halftime, and Illinois gets a field goal in the final frame to put them up for good. Some key losses for Illinois in this game, specifically their quarterback Danny DeVito, as well as a wide receiver. But all in all, watching this game, it was two, what I would say, Derek, are good defenses and two pretty mediocre offenses to poor offenses. Maybe I'm being a little bit nice, but Spencer Petras again struggles in the pocket to evade sacks, in essence. That's, to me, his biggest downfall. He just really struggles with pressure, and ultimately, you know, nobody can really get anything going offensively.
Yeah, this game had all the makings of a quintessential Iowa game. In fact, I frankly was surprised that Illinois pulled it out. I mean, when it was 6-6 deep into the game, I mean, this is, everything was going the way that Iowa wants it to go. They're just fine winning games 9-6 with them being the victors, or you know, something super low scoring like that. So Illinois did jump out on their first series, which was first drive, which was all scripted plays, and ran an incredibly high number of different formations and personnel, which got them, they moved the ball on the first drive. And, you know, they're doing those scripted plays in order to figure out what's going to perhaps work against a tough Iowa defense. And I think they had threw some things that Iowa hadn't seen. They were able to move the ball. But really, after that, I mean, they couldn't move the ball just like Iowa couldn't. So I do agree with you. I think it was two good defenses. I think Iowa's defense is better. I think Illinois' offense is better, which isn't saying that much because Iowa's offense is historically bad. But, you know, if Iowa had, on the scoop and score, had that not been called back late in the game, that was just, again, that would be a quintessential Iowa win. But the bottom line is it was called back, and Illinois did just enough to pull out. So I'll just end with this. A few weeks ago, we talked about how Iowa was must-watch television because of how good their defense was and how poor their offense was, and the special teams is good. I think I've now had my fill of watching Iowa television. That game felt like it was 5.5 hours long, and I've seen enough. We know what to expect now from Iowa, and I don't know that it's must-watch television for me any longer.
I think the thing that surprised me, Luke, was I thought that Iowa was going to have a significant special teams advantage in this game. And if you would have told me Illinois' starting place kicker wouldn't play in this game, and then their backup comes in and goes 3-for-3 on field goals, your guy, Fabrizio Pinton, goes 3-of-3, and then Torrey Taylor gets out-punted by Hugh Robertson.
That was a shock.
Yeah.
It's shocking when things like that happen to Iowa. And to Derek's point, you thought that if Artur Satowski's elbow wasn't actually down there, it's one of those games where, again, Iowa's defense outscores their offense. Iowa finds a way to win.
Yeah.
And
I just want to add, too, like, we can't overlook the fact that Iowa special teams, you know, forced turnovers as well, right? Like, it was, like as Derek's saying, just that quintessential Iowa game. And they
muffed punt,
yes,
from,
exactly,
for Illinois, yes, turnover inside the red zone. Yeah, it had all the makings of an Iowa game, it seemed.
Well, I want to bring up the tweet that Luke, I forget which one of you guys, I think it was Derek.
Sent it this morning. I saw that one, too.
So, Iowa punts from their own 16. It's muffed by Isaiah Williams, and they recover. They go three plays, Iowa's offense does, loses 6 yards, and they punt again. Two plays later, they force a fumble and recover it at the 5. They go four more plays on offense and lose 4 yards before they kick a field goal. AKA, if you're keeping track at home, that's a 15-play, negative 10-yard, 76-punt-yard field goal drive, which is just the epitome of Iowa's offense. And I think I sent it to you guys. David Eichholt from our Iowa 24/7 site
asked Kirk after the game, like, what, I mean, you've scored like six offensive touchdowns, and he has a snarky reply back saying, yeah, did you also forget we won 10 games last year? Like, I don't understand why you come up with that. That's what you tell to the media guy at that point, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But I think what I also learned from, I didn't get to watch this game live, I rewatched it back, is Illinois' defensive front is really good. And to Derek's point, watching the first drive for Illinois was wild. And I say that because they go from five wide to like 13 personnel to, again, they throw everything at you in the book trying to see how you're going to line up. And it helps, obviously, if you can then on your opening scripted drive go 17 plays, because, yeah, you're going to get a lot of looks then. But this is an Illinois defense that is very talented. It's an Illinois offense that has some playmakers. And I think you both mentioned it. There's some key injuries out of this game for Illinois that are going to be something we're going to be monitoring very closely. We'll be talking about it on Gopher Illustrated this week. Number one being the Tommy DeVito, their quarterback. Isaiah Williams, who left the game with a concussion. We'll see if he's able to clear the protocol. He's their best receiver. And then they've also got two defensive starters who left the game and did not return. So a lot of key injuries, which I'm guessing plays a part, Luke, in Minnesota being a road favorite against a now ranked Illinois team who is white hot.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. It'll be fun to break that down when we do and preview that Illinois-Minnesota game.
Hey, one more thing, Luke, I just wanted to mention, since Minnesota plays both of these teams here throughout the rest of the year, it was interesting to watch the two really good defenses, but they really weren't very similar. And by that, I mean, Iowa, their defense and their success on defense is just based on being incredibly fundamentally sound and not making mistakes. Now, they have NFL talent on their defense, no question. In the linebacker and one in the secondary for sure. I don't think they have quite as good a defensive line as they've had in the last few years, but they're just suffocating in that you just cannot get them to make a mistake for the most part. They're just so sound. Every gap is defended, et cetera. On the other side, Illinois, who the Gophers, you mentioned, are going to face next week, they're almost the opposite. They're incredibly aggressive, and I really believe their coaching staff just lets them play. They do make mistakes. They do get out of their gap, but they just really allow them to. They have them go. I mean, their defensive line penetrates, they chase the ball, they pursue, and then in the secondary, you know, when they match up with man coverage, I mean, they just let those guys cover. They're not as keyed in on following their assignment and being fundamentally sound. I'm not trying to say they're unsound, but they just kind of let them be athletes and they just run. I mean, they just cover space. They try and make plays. They're very, very physical, which we talked about last week. I mean, they're kind of this tough as nails, physical, tough defense. Whereas on the other side of it, Iowa is just this very scripted, fundamentally mistake-free, well-coached defense. So it'd be interesting to see the approach, you know, particularly from the Gophers offensive coaching staff when they game plan for each of those defenses.
Ryan, I wore my Caps custom hat today all day that supports the Angel Foundation because I have to protect my head because, one, I am a very fair-skinned individual and I don't have a lot of hair up there anymore. So I wear this hat and I get a few comments like, hey, that's a pretty nice hat. What's it for? And I say, well, it's Caps custom hat and it supports the Angel Foundation. So what does it support, Ryan?
Yeah, the Angel Foundation offers relief, whether that's financial aid assistance with folks going through cancer, education about everything that's going on with the, you know, the different cancers out there. And then I think maybe most importantly here, social and emotional support. And that's where the good folks with the Angel Foundation have partnered up with Tanner Morgan, Gopher starting quarterback, for these hats. And if you want to check them out, they're at capscustoms.com. That is K-A-P-P-S customs.com. I've got them. Luke's got them. Again, whether you are looking for something like a maroon and gold hat, whether you're looking for a beanie that's going to keep your head warm when you're out there shoveling snow or it gets a little bit colder, they all go to a great cause. And that's where the proceeds from these hats at capscustoms.com, that is K-A-P-P-S offerrelief.customs.com. The proceeds from these hats that Tanner has partnered with go to offer relief to these adults with cancer and their loved ones through a few different areas. So we'd love for you to check them out, capscustoms.com.
Okay, let's take a look at, now that we're 6 weeks through the college football season, I think it's 6 weeks, right? I think it's six. Yeah.
For most teams, yeah.
Yeah, for most teams, it's 6 weeks through. You know, where are we at here in the Big Ten West? The Gophers' goal is obviously to win the Big Ten West. They currently sit smack dab in the middle, in between the 2-1 teams and the 1-2 teams. So the teams in front of them are Illinois, Purdue, Nebraska, that's what we all sort of expected coming into this year, probably no doubt. And below them, you have Wisconsin, Iowa, and Northwestern, the three teams that have actually won the Big Ten West in recent memory. Yeah, I guess let's start there where we're at. Like, what's the road forward? Obviously, taking on what is probably the team sitting as close to Purdue in the driver's seat in Illinois this next week at Illinois. And Ryan, you mentioned in the earlier segment that the Gophers are currently sitting at a 3.5-point favorite. But yeah, you know, what are we expecting? How does this play out? And what are some storylines we should be paying attention to, Ryan?
I would first say this is the most important game of the season now for Minnesota. I understand if you're PJ Fleck and what he'll say at his press conference tomorrow is one game championship season. That's great, but this is a game you absolutely without question need to win if you want to be anywhere near the driver's seat for the remaining, you know, six games on your schedule. And I say that because Illinois has just run a gauntlet where they just beat Wisconsin and Iowa in the same season, I believe, for the first time. I think I saw the stat was since the 80s. I wasn't even alive then. And that's where you kind of project them forward. After the Minnesota game, they've got Nebraska, Michigan State, Purdue, Michigan, Northwestern. I would imagine in those final five games after Minnesota, they're going to be projected favorites potentially in four of them. Obviously, Michigan, probably not. I don't know what Vegas will think about the Illinois-Purdue game, but I mean, this is a really good Illinois team, and you already screwed the pooch a little bit against Purdue in a very winnable game, but then you've also got Purdue, who just won two very tough games, and you look at their next schedule. They got Nebraska at home this weekend in a night game, then they've got to travel to Camp Randall before a bye week to prepare for Kirk Ferentz's kryptonite and Jeff Brohm, and then Illinois, but here's what I would say is – I know there's a lot of people who are just thinking Purdue's not going to lose another game. Purdue could certainly, I would imagine, be favored in every single game, maybe outside of the Illinois game on their schedule. I don't know what Vegas is also going to think of the Wisconsin game. But this is still a Jeff Brohm team. And what I mean by that is Purdue in the Jeff Brohm tenure has not exactly been the model of consistency. Now, I know that they've done it in back-to-back weeks on the road, but would it shock anyone listening to this, or I guess, Derek, would it shock you if after two great road wins, they come home against Nebraska in a night game and absolutely lay an egg?
Well, this, no.
This version of Nebraska is bad.
Right.
But
Nebraska is a little bit of a stretch. But beyond that, I mean, you went through the next three. Absolutely not. I would not be shocked if they lose any of the three after Nebraska. I would be pretty shocked if they lost.
Iowa, Illinois. It's not. Yeah. I understand that it's down years for Wisconsin and Iowa, which will lead me into a soapbox here in a second. But I know that Purdue is now in the driver's seat, and then you could say that maybe they're driving with Illinois, and then Minnesota's in the passenger seat, which. There's a lot of football that's left to be played. And so, yes, Purdue's in the driver's seat because they now own the head-to-head win against Minnesota. These two teams will obviously play in Champaign in November. But I'm also sitting here, and I'm already telling you, we're not even midway through October, and I'm so tired of the Big Ten West stinks takes because the Big Ten West doesn't stink. Like, I was at a wedding this weekend in the Madison area, which I know you're all throwing your condolences my way, but I can't tell you how many people would try to talk college football and say, yeah, the West stinks, you know, or even listening to local media around here on radio stations say, yeah, you know, if not this year for Minnesota, when? I get maybe that angle, but I'm tired of the angle that people think it stinks in the West because Wisconsin and Iowa are bad. Aren't we always just screaming that we wish sports had more parity? So now that we see up years from Illinois and Purdue, who, again, I think both of those teams should be ranked right now. Now only one of them is. And I understand that the last game that all of you watched for your Gopher football team left a bad taste in your mouth, and I'm not telling you that it was a good taste because it wasn't. It was bad. But I still think Minnesota is a pretty good football team, and I would tell you in the last five games where offensive coordinator Kirk Sciarca has had a bye week or a longer time than that, a.k.a. a bowl game to prepare, his offense in the 2018 and 2019 last five situations there scored 30-plus points in every one of those five contests. Now, that's going to be exponentially more difficult because this is an Illinois team that has given up 10 points or less in five of their six games. But it's just – I'm just tired of the whole Big Ten West stinks takes because someone said that to me this weekend, and I was like, you are an idiot. It's just there are a lot of teams like – here's what I'll say is I think Iowa finds a way to make it to a bowl game. I'm not quite sure about Wisconsin. I've had some people on Gopher Illustrated ask me about that. I understand they just beat the crap out of Northwestern, but I'm the last one to tell you about Northwestern and how bad they are. But I think there's going to be at least four teams in the West that make it to a bowl. And I would take any team in the Big Ten West to get something in the Big 12 right now or the ACC, not named Clemson. Like, just because Illinois, Minnesota, and Purdue are the top three teams in the West doesn't automatically mean you should say because Wisconsin is bad and Iowa is mediocre that the Big Ten West stinks. I know I get way too soapboxy on this podcast and Luke yells at me, but it's such a lazy take to me because just because it's different teams, I think Illinois and Purdue are good football teams that should be ranked. I think Minnesota's a good football team. Iowa's defense is one of the best I've seen from the Hawkeyes in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
There's good football teams in the West. It's just because their logos look a little bit different doesn't mean you should say the West stinks.
Yeah, I've never understood too the saying where someone says, you know, college football is better when Wisconsin's on top of the Big Ten West, or you know, I'm using that as an example, but like when this school is good, it's like who cares? College football is great anytime. I think the thing that's also changes kind of perception of how good the West is or relative to the East, and they always compare it. It's like, let's be honest, Ohio State and Michigan, they're literally in their own tier, right? They're on the top of the top. They're in those they're probably in those top eight schools that are literally in their own tier of college football. Penn State's maybe flirting with that, but I'm not really sure how good they are yet.
And to your point on Penn State, I truly don't know how good Penn State is. We're gonna start to find out this weekend when they take on Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, should they be ranked in the top 10? I have no idea. They haven't played in really anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Purdue, which how much do you want to take from game one?
I don't know. It's hard. Week one is always such a crapshoot. I mean, look at, you know, Northwestern beat Nebraska, right? And I'm not saying that Northwestern's, you know, Nebraska's amazing. They're two bad teams, but yeah. But okay, so if we think about it though, if you take out Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, I would argue the next best teams are probably Purdue, Illinois, Minnesota, right? I mean, maybe you fit Maryland in there. Iowa's probably after that. I don't know. I feel like in the end, like right now, if you look at the Big Ten West, the crossover games are 5-5. It's usually pretty even. You know, Ohio State's going to get theirs, but Michigan State's bad. Indiana's bad. Rutgers is bad, right? Like, there aren't these great teams, you know, top to bottom and both on one side of the conference. I get that Ohio State and Michigan are really good, and I get that the traditional powers are down, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think parity's great. I'm with you. I really like that take, Ryan. Derek, we got to get your feedback, though. You know, what are your thoughts here, you know, going forward with the remainder of the season?
Well, I think that part of what, I mean, just to comment on the, on, you know, perception here. I think that Ryan's correct. And if you take a cursory glance at the West and you don't see a dominant Wisconsin or a dominant Iowa team, I think your instinct is to say, well, the West is no good this year. I don't agree. I agree with Ryan. I don't agree with that take. And furthermore, I think if you're a Minnesota fan, you should want disruption. You know, college football is so difficult for teams to, you know, that traditionally haven't been, let's just say, contending for conference championships, to take them from a non-contender to a contender is so difficult. In a league like the NFL, all you have to do is be bad enough for long enough to amass enough draft picks and it'll turn around for you. That's just, it's the way the NFL is structured. The worst team gets the best pick and so forth. So there are parity rules layered in the NFL that just naturally make that happen, where that's not the case in college. And I know I'm preaching to the choir with you guys here, but again, if you're, to your point, Luke, if people are saying, well, I think college football is better if the teams who are normally good are just good. Well, what fun is that, I guess? If you're not one of those teams, I get it. If you're a fringe fan or a more casual fan, it's easier to follow college football when Alabama's good and Clemson's good and Wisconsin wins the West and Ohio State wins the East. And I get it. It's easier to follow. Whereas in a year like this year, particularly in the West, it's more difficult to follow. But if you're watching the games and you're breaking down these teams, I agree. There's not an Ohio State in the West. That there's no doubt about that. There's probably not a Michigan in the West either. But I do think there are good teams in the West. They are even in crossovers. And I do think, you know, I'm not a rankings expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that there are teams in the West that are underranked at this point. I do think it's easy to look at offense first teams and rank them higher, or maybe there's some SEC bias, what have you. But, you know, this will hopefully iron itself out as we go forward. But I guess I'm agreeing in that if you're a Minnesota fan, I think a little bit of disruption is a good thing. And I do think this is an opportunity to take a step forward and reshuffle the deck a little bit. You know, maybe this is not a great Iowa year. Yes, their defense is historically good, but their offense is historically bad. The Wisconsin is, you know, bad enough to have fired their head coach. I mean, that says something. So this is an opportunity, but it's not going to be given to them because Illinois, Purdue, and other teams have stepped up as well. So, I mean, I'll stop there, Luke. I don't know if I answered your original question or
no,
not.
No, it's okay. Let's go with this. Let's change the topic a little bit, but I think we're all in agreement on the West, and we probably are biased to a certain extent. We're trying to justify the league that our team plays in. But to that extent, I want to focus now more on the Big Ten West and, you know, who are the players and who are not the players, okay? So just real quickly, who do you think has a legitimate shot, Ryan, of winning the West today? And I don't need any justification. Just give me the teams.
The top three teams in my mind, in no order, Minnesota, Illinois, and Purdue. I understand that Nebraska fans believe they have something because they've beaten the two worst teams, not named Nebraska. Well, they can't beat themselves. Or I'd argue they already have because they got their head coach fired. But they already played Northwestern. They just beat Indiana and Rutgers. Now, I look at the final six games for Nebraska. How many games are they going to be favored in against Purdue, Illinois, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Iowa? Any of them?
Probably none.
Yeah, so I can't put them in there. I think Wisconsin has too many issues. And I was talking with somebody that I really trust in terms of, like, talent evaluation. He's a lot smarter than me. And he made the comment to me that this is the least talented Wisconsin team he's seen in a long time. And he said, you know, it's credit to Wisconsin with the number of NFL guys they've had. But he says, you know, you look at why Wisconsin's now 3-3. It's because where are their dudes at linebacker? Mm-hmm. I mean, for how many years has Wisconsin had Leo Chanels and Jack Sanborns just running around? Well, they don't really have that. They don't have a lot in the secondary. You look at their skill position players and their quarterback. I also think that plays a part. But I mean, Wisconsin, I just don't think is going to be consistent enough. Iowa has the defense to absolutely win the West, but they have the offense that is the most disrespectful thing to see in my eyes in a long time. And then that leaves you the final three teams of Minnesota, Purdue, and Illinois. And as I said, I think Purdue's probably got a little bit of a step ahead, but people are trying to call the race, Luke, before we're even at the halfway part.
I know. That's the thing that I think that was going to be my point. You know, for most teams, you're 33% of the way through. You still got 66% to go. Yeah, there's so much game left.
Like, Minnesota's played two conference games. They have seven remaining. Illinois and Purdue have played three conference games. They have six remaining. And what I would guess happens is someone's going to win the West with three conference losses.
Yes.
Now, again, that would require Purdue slipping up a couple of times. But I also think, to the point we were making earlier, I think Wisconsin and Iowa are still good enough to beat Purdue or Illinois. And if the game's played 100 times, 30, 40 times out of 100, like, it's still college football, too, where it's 18 to 24-year-olds. Like, that's why they play the games, Derek.
In particular, just want to mention on Wisconsin, you know, Wisconsin and Iowa in particular, I think, need a lot of help if you're going to make a case for them to contend for the division title. But if let's operate under the hypothesis that Wisconsin is going to get better as the season goes on. Now, maybe they're not going to contend for the division, but that says a lot about the teams that have to play them yet in the rest of the season. So, I mean, for me, Northwestern is out of it. I agree with you, Ryan, in that I just don't see Nebraska. I've seen enough of them play this year that I don't believe they're going to contend. Both Iowa and Wisconsin have to have a lot of help, in particular when you consider that Iowa is going to play Ohio State this week. I don't believe they have a very, very, very small chance of winning that game.
They got a bye week, and then they play Ohio State.
Okay, their next game. Okay, so not this weekend. Okay.
Iowa goes into a bye week, and Kirk Ferentz makes no changes offensively, and it's been 24 hours since, which is mind-boggling, but that's a stubborn old man.
So then, to break it down to Purdue, Minnesota, and Illinois, I think the things to watch for me are – Purdue has the best schedule. They have that on their side. Mm-hmm. They've won tough, I would call, matchup games against Minnesota and Maryland, which has helped. But the question for me is, can they be consistent enough? It's what we kind of talked about earlier, which is I do think they're a little more grounded this year because their defense is better. I think that has a grounding effect, but they have just shown with Jeff Brohm as head coach, they have a susceptibility to lose, you know, one score wild games. So can they avoid that? That's the question for Purdue. For Illinois, for me, the question is, can Illinois stay healthy? Mm-hmm. I'm going on what Ryan has told me. He knows the talent better than I do. And they are very talented at Illinois, but they're not very deep. And the way that they're running Chase Brown into the ground, they did mount a few injuries against Iowa. Does that sort of – and we've seen Minnesota teams like this in the past where you know, it was sort of becomes the season that could have been, where the starters for Minnesota are really good, but they didn't have the depth that Minnesota does now. And all of a sudden, three or four injuries to those starters, and that's the difference. So – that's for me what to watch with Illinois. And Minnesota, I think, you know, the question there is, can they continue to win? Can they win enough big games? I mean, I think schedule-wise, it's a little bit tougher than Purdue's remaining schedule. But, you know, competing, they have a big one coming up. And then the whiteout game against Penn State. I mean, the intriguing thing for me is that we talked about this last week. Normally, this all shakes out in November, and this may be the opposite, where this may shake out in the next couple, for Minnesota in particular, over the next two or three weeks. I mean, coaches would just hate to hear me say that, by the way, because they do take it one week at a time, and they don't believe one game's more important than the other, what have you. But that's also something to look at, as just the way that there's been some disruption, that that things become critically important for Minnesota here in October, as opposed to usually being November.
One thing I wanted to point out, we often refer to the Eyes on Big podcast. We listen to them, and I think Big Kurt mentioned that what's crazy about this Illinois kind of rise up, these are all Lovey players largely, which is just wild to me. You know, this could just be a flash in the pan. I don't know how they're recruiting, Ryan. I don't follow it like you do, but the fact that he said that is just wild, that, you know, it wasn't, they made a wholesale transfer change or whatever, and they're in this. It's literally coaching them up. Like, just, that to me is just absolutely wild. I want to also just mention that, you know, Purdue, they definitely have the best schedule, but Purdue is just a goofy team from time to time. I do think that they're better this year. I thought their defense kind of got exposed a little bit in this Maryland game. I expect them to see them get screened a lot more going forward and see how they can adjust. But ultimately, I think you guys are right. Those are the top three teams. But like you said, there's so much season left. There's so many key injuries could happen, etc. Teams will get better as well. It wouldn't surprise me, like you said, Ryan, that the winner could be 6-3 in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I am expecting them to be. I understand that Purdue is probably going to be favored in each one of their games in the remainder of the season, but Purdue is not the model of consistency, or at least recent history outside of the last couple of weeks would tell me that, or just over the course of the Jeff Brohm era. Now, if you want to know what does Minnesota have to do to get back in a better position, I will say this. If they lose the game this weekend, they are kicked to the backseat, where it is Illinois and it's Purdue, and you're going to need a lot of help if you're a Gopher fan to get to Indy at that point, because Illinois and Purdue would own the head-to-heads against you. So Minnesota needs to win this weekend. You know, the Penn State game is going to be a tough one, but then you look at Minnesota's schedule, you face Rutgers, who just fired their offensive coordinator, you face Nebraska on the road, Northwestern, then you end with Iowa and Wisconsin. And I still believe it's not even worth talking about Iowa and Wisconsin right now, because those teams are just going to continue to look so much different on November 19th and November 26th than they are right now on October 9th. They're going to continue to ebb and flow like Minnesota will. But if the Gophers are going to remain a legitimate contender in the West, they're going to need to beat Illinois, and then they're going to need a little bit of help from one of their rivals. In that Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois in that three-game stretch in late October, early November, they're going to need their rivals to, you know, stand up a little bit and put Purdue on the ground at least once.
All right, I want to thank everyone for listening. It was fun to talk some football here on the bye week. It was also really fun to watch some football. Again, we thank you for listening, and go Gophers.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.